It took us 4 years to get pregnant with Hazel after several years of what doctors referred to as unexplained infertility and two early miscarriages. I had managed to stay pregnant more than a couple weeks. Infertility has been in the past somewhat of a taboo topic. No one really talks about it, and yet, as women, living with that mountain is hard. The constant question of when are you having kids never ceases to end, and it is almost always assumed that you are. I mean, God forbid you choose not to have children. Well, I think we all know how that conversation goes. But we'll come back to that. On today's episode, I want to share with you my story, the story that helped me find my voice, that taught me how to be an advocate, and that introduced me to a world that I thought I understood, but newsflash, I had no idea. Let's jump in. After delivering our daughter 4 months prematurely, I learned how imperative it is to feel validated in this journey, to feel heard and understood, and how we all need to hear stories of strength, fear, hope, and celebration. Together, we can share a space where we will talk advocacy, special needs parenting, and just being a mom in today's crazy but beautiful world. This is Raising Hazelnut. While my journey to motherhood began long before I got pregnant, it was Hazel's early arrival that truly changed me. I was 23 weeks pregnant when I woke up that morning in November with tightness in my chest. It was the middle of the night and I felt unwell, so I ran a bath at 2 in the morning. Totally normal, right? Anyways, as I was lying in the bath feeling short of breath, I assumed the baby was sitting in a way that was pushing on my lungs. But I did have the wherewithal to figure out that being in a tub full of water, feeling short of breath probably wasn't the brightest idea I'd had. So I got out and climbed back into bed and fell asleep. My husband woke me in the morning to say goodbye as he was leaving for work, and I noted that I was still feeling unwell, so I went back to sleep until I had to get myself ready for work. Only, I never made it to work that day. Instead, I found myself in the fetal position on my bathroom floor in agonizing pain. I thought for sure that I was having contractions, and I knew I needed a hospital. With my husband being an hour away for work, I called my sister down the road and I told her I needed her to drive me to the emergency room. Why I didn't call an ambulance, I couldn't tell you. But after I hung up the phone, I quite literally had to tell myself to get up off the floor and put some clothes on unless I wanted my sister to find me naked on the bathroom floor. So I called my husband, who dropped everything and started his way home. And I called my mom, and then I waited for my sister on the front steps. When I got to the emergency room, they sent me up to maternity. I changed into a gown, gave a urine sample, and when the nurse checked my sample, she bolted from the bathroom, dipstick in hand, saying, "No, no, no." I looked uneasily at my sister, wondering what that was all about. It wasn't long after this that the headache began. Slowly at first, but it was a different kind of headache than I had felt before. Truthfully, at this point, I was still thinking that the worst that could happen was that I would be sent home on bed rest. The thought hadn't even crossed my mind of anything more ominous. My husband arrived, and I assured him it was probably nothing, and I'm sorry he left work. Denial at its finest. But then the pain in my head continued to worsen until I was restless and whimpering in pain. I was starting to panic, hyperventilate. I had never felt such terrible pain. This is where my memory of the day gets a little spotty. The nurse came in to check my blood pressure, only to find it was a staggering 205 over 138. If you aren't familiar with blood pressures, an average for a healthy female is 120 over 80. This is when things turn serious. The possibility that I was going to have a stroke or a seizure was real. The risk of it happening, well, I think it's safe to say that it's a wonder I didn't. My urine, as I expected, had high levels of protein, and my blood pressure was off the charts. Yep, I was preeclamptic. I knew of preeclampsia, but I never imagined it would happen to me. So they gave me a catheter and started an IV, giving me magnesium sulfate drip to help prevent a stroke or a seizure. They did blood work and sent me for an ultrasound. And like I said, my memory's spotty. I don't quite remember being brought downstairs for an ultrasound or the nurse reaming out the tech for making us wait as I quickly deteriorated. But I do remember what happened after. While the pain in my head was too much to bear, I remember the OB on call coming to my room and standing at the foot of my bed. I remember her telling me that yes, I was preeclamptic, but I was also sick with something much more serious. I had a rare pregnancy complication called HELLP syndrome. My blood work had revealed that my blood wasn't clotting, my liver was failing, and my blood cells were breaking apart. My blood pressure wasn't coming down, and the ultrasound showed that our baby was not getting enough of what she needed from me due to the illness. The worst part of it all? There's no treatment. The treatment is delivering the baby, regardless of how many weeks gestation you are. So they gave me a shot of steroids to help the baby's lungs and told us that the critical care transport team was on its way to transport me to Royal Columbian Hospital, a hospital 100 kilometers away. The plan was to give me a second dose of steroids on arrival, and with any luck, they would stabilize me enough to keep baby in a couple more days. But that couldn't have been further from what really happened. We arrived at Royal Columbian and it felt like something out of a movie. There were so many nurses, so much hustle and bustle, and as quickly as they rushed me in was as quickly as they'd gotten me settled. The rush labs came back quickly and it showed that I had reached critical levels. Our baby had to be delivered right away. No time for repeat ultrasound and definitely no chance for an additional dose of steroids. I had to get to an OR stat or I simply wasn't going to survive. The neonatologist on call, Dr. Miroslav Stavel, came in to introduce himself as the physician who would be caring for our baby. He delivered her very low odds of survival, but he assured us he would be in the OR with me and he would do everything that he could for our baby. The baby was not yet considered to have reached viability, so the conversations that happened in those brief moments before I was whisked away to the operating room were grim. There was really nothing positive to report in those moments, and yet, as my husband held my hand and I gripped his tightly, all I could think of was, please, just make this pain go away. I didn't feel any fear. I didn't feel any uncertainty. All I could feel was the pounding pressure in my head. So I kissed my husband from the stretcher and they took me beyond the doors, you know, those ones that read authorized personnel only. And I left my husband and family behind, not knowing whether I or our baby would survive the next several hours. Up next, baby Hazel is born, and what that meant for me as a new mom after just battling HELLP syndrome. Let's get back to it. My time in the OR was pretty much as I expected it to be. I had never seen the inside of an operating room in real life before, and even though I couldn't sit up and look around, I could feel the energy in the room, that hustle and bustle, the chitter-chatter, the nurses and staff rushing around getting things ready. And as I lay there on the table, the anesthesiologist came over to speak to me and get me prepped. Now, because my platelets were so low, I could not get an epidural. The needle into my spine would have almost guaranteed to have left me in a state of paralysis from the waist down. So it was required that I get a general anesthesia. Again, something I'd never experienced before and was now experiencing in the heat of an emergency. So my left arm was laid out beside me and the anesthetist started a PICC line. And as she was inserting this line, she had to pull the needle out, and when she did so, she explained to me that my blood pressure was so high that my artery was clamping down on the needle that she was trying to use to insert, and she begged me not to look. She just said to me, "Ashley, please do me a favor, do not look to your left," and when she said that, I could feel the warm blood pooling around my arm, and I assured her that there was absolutely no way I was going to be looking at what she was doing. But it was that moment there that truly had me fearful. It was that moment where I realized that I might not wake up from this, that I actually might not survive. I had been told that it was risky. I mean, My blood was not clotting. My blood pressure was still sky high, and they were about to cut me open to remove our baby. That didn't sound like a good combination, but because of the pain I was feeling, I hadn't really had a moment to think about it until I was there, in an operating room, being prepped for it. So, in that moment, Dr. Stavel, he appeared, and he was standing at the head of my bed, and of course, he was fully gowned and gloved and masked, and his head appeared over mine, and he had a mask on, so all I could see were his very kind eyes. And he said, "Hi, Ashley, it's Dr. Stavel. Do you remember me?" Of course, I remembered the man who was about to deliver our baby. And it was that friendly face, that familiar face that just kept me calm and helped me remember that everything was going to be okay. And so I did all I could do. I put my hand onto my belly and I talked to our baby. I told our baby that I was here and that mommy had to go to sleep for a little bit and that a very special team of doctors and nurses was going to be taking her for a little bit, but that she would be safe with them. And I just told baby that over and over again. Now, you've probably heard me say baby instead of she. We decided not to find out the gender of my pregnancy, and so I didn't know who baby was yet at this point. So I just kept referring to her as baby. And at that point, the anesthetist had gotten the PICC line in, and she said to me, "Okay, Ashley, I'm going to get you to count back from five and think of something really happy. Think of a really happy place." And so I pictured our baby, and that was all I could do. It was then, as I was under general anesthesia, that our daughter, Hazel, entered the world surrounded by a team of professionals that would fight for her for the next 6 months as she was nursed and cared for and brought back to health for the next 6 months in the neonatal intensive care unit. Hazel was born weighing 420 grams, which is just under a pound. She was unimaginably small, and so when I woke up in the post-anesthetic care unit, my husband was there at my side, and the first thing I asked was, "How is our baby?" And I was terrified. I was so scared that because I'd been under general anesthesia, that our baby would not survive, and that I would have been asleep through it all and never have met our baby. So I asked my husband, "How's the baby?" And I was so fearful for what he would say, but he smiled and he looked at me and he said, "Ash, we have a baby girl." And I just remember being so thrilled, and not because he'd said girl, because he'd said the words have. He didn't say had. He didn't have a look of regret on his face or sadness. He was telling me that our baby was alive and that she was a girl and she was downstairs in the NICU. So he pulled out his phone and he showed me a picture, and my gosh, she looked small. But it wasn't until 36 hours later when I first saw Hazel in real life that I got the sense of just how small she is. To put it into perspective, you guys, a box of cake mix, of powdered cake mix, is 435 grams. Like, she weighed less than a brick of butter. Her whole hand fit into my husband's thumbnail. Like, this is how small she was. She was so tiny and so underdeveloped that her skin was almost translucent. You could see her heart beating. You could see where her organs were, and her eyes were still fused shut. But despite all of that, she had a full head of hair, which was wild. So when I was in the post-anesthetic care unit, I asked my husband what we should name her. And he, of course, knowing what we'd just gone through, told me, "You decide, you tell me." And we decided together, but we decided to name her Hazel. And it was on Hazel's third day of life when my sister actually said, "Oh, she's just a little hazelnut." And so the nickname stuck. She became Hazelnut, or Little Nut, as she was lovingly referred to in the NICU. And so, if you guys are wondering where the name Raising Hazelnut has come from, that is the story behind that. In the days that followed Hazel's birth, I spent an unusually long time recovering from HELLP syndrome. The swing in blood pressure numbers that we'd seen from super high down to dangerously low, unfortunately, that had damaged my kidneys. And so while my blood recovered and my blood began to put itself back together after breaking apart, and my platelets finally started to increase to a point where my blood was starting to clot again, the one thing that wasn't recovering well was my kidneys. And each day they would do lab tests and my kidney function would be deteriorating. And they would tell me that, if the blood pressure was stabilized but the kidneys hadn't, they weren't really sure what was going on. So we watched it for a few days. And eventually they told me that if my kidney function didn't improve, they would need to do a kidney biopsy to figure out what was going on. So the next day, my kidney labs would trend upwards and it would look like they were improving, only to go right back to where they were the following day. And again, they would threaten, "Oh, we might need to do a kidney biopsy if your labs don't improve tomorrow." And the next day, the kidney function would go back up again. And so we played this game for a couple weeks until finally my kidney function started to improve and I was finally discharged from the hospital. But it was on Hazel's fourth day of life that I truly realized what a critical situation we found ourselves in. The neonatologist on call on her fourth day, along with two nurses, came up to my room in maternity and they sat down on the bed and they told us, well, no parent ever wants to hear, that they had done all they could do for Hazel. Her kidneys were in failure. She was septic, and we needed to go say our goodbyes. That we needed to call anyone we needed to call, and it was best if we get down to the NICU right away. And as we stood there at her bedside, and I cried tears heavier than I've ever cried before, and I felt a pain like I'd never felt. The emotional scarring was unbelievable in that moment as my husband made arrangements with the nurses for me to hold Hazel as she passed away because I hadn't held her yet at this point. It was all surreal now looking back. But then something happened and Hazel turned a corner and the nurse who was caring for her, she squealed with delight, and we actually were able to leave the NICU that evening and go back to our room. And Hazel continued to make that upwards climb that she needed to make from that one situation. And, our next 6 months that we had in the NICU, they were hard. I mean, there were moments that felt dire. She was intubated on a jet ventilator for 58 days. And after that, she was on every type of respiratory support that exists. She, you name it, she was on it. She had very sick lungs. But there was something that stood out during our time in the NICU, and it's something that I've spoken before at neonatal conferences. But it's something that I really feel needs to be mentioned, and that is that the team at RCH had put together this amazing protocol that allowed moms and dads to hold their baby while on the jet ventilator. And many places to this day still don't do it, but they were able to implement a protocol to do it safely and securely. And so on day 32, I got to hold Hazel for the very first time. Any of you who are parents, I'm sure you can imagine what that feels like to not hold your baby for 32 days. Your baby that is sick and that is struggling, and that all you can do is reach into an isolette and put your hands on them. So that moment was everything, you guys. I mean, it is easily by far the most memorable moment I've ever had in my life. But it's thanks to the team at RCH for putting this protocol together that I was able to do that rather than having to wait 60 days. So it was during the next 6 months of Hazel's time in the NICU where I would go Monday to Friday, 12 hours a day, because I had such a long drive through the dead of winter. It would take about an hour and a half each way for me to get to the hospital. So I would pump before leaving the house, I'd get to the hospital, I'd pump again, and I would do this routine where I sat at Hazel's bedside for 12 hours and then head home while my husband was at work. And on the weekends, we would go visit her together. And that's where I really began to find my voice. It wasn't just me that was responsible for finding it. It was definitely with the help and support of the team at RCH. You know, the doctors there were so, what's the word I need to find? I guess like just so encouraging of family integrated care. And they would make sure that I was present for morning rounds. And they would have me lead morning rounds as Hazel got older. And I started to get to know how her evenings went better. And once she was more stable, it was those kinds of things that made me as a new mom, as a first time mom, learn how to find my voice and learn how to advocate for my daughter. My daughter who was going to need that voice in the future. The NICU is never a place that any parent wants to find themselves or their child in, but we always took the mindset that we couldn't change the cards we'd been dealt. So all we could do was make the best of the situation we were in. We learned that knowledge is power, that understanding things helps us to process them. It helps us to advocate for Hazel. It helps us to better understand the world that we're living in, the world that she's living in, and what we can do to best support her. And that is a mindset that we've taken over the last 3.5 years since Hazel was born. It's something that has gotten me through the really, really hard times. You know those days where you just wake up and you think to yourself, how am I going to do this again? But you just do. You just do. You take it one day at a time and you do your best to have a positive outlook. And when I say positive, I don't mean false hope or sunshine and rainbows. I just mean that in every situation, I firmly believe that there is something good that can come of it. Even in the most tragic of situations, there is an underlying silver lining somewhere. It might be something that appears years down the road, or it might be something that we as individuals pull from that experience. It might be a way that we can change ourselves. Maybe that's the silver lining. It might be a traumatic and tragic situation where there's no good in that situation, but how we choose to react, what we choose to do with that experience as human beings, as mothers, as fathers, that is where that silver lining is. That's where the gold is, you guys. So when I say that this situation changed me, I mean, there's no doubt that a situation like this would change anybody. But Hazel helped me find my voice. Before, I could not stand up for myself. I was a pushover. I didn't know how to advocate and what it meant to truly advocate. But I do now. And it's thanks to that little hazelnut that I do. That's it, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to the very first episode of Raising Hazelnut. On next week's episode, I'm going to share with you what it was like to bring home a baby on oxygen and what that looked like as a new mom, a first-time mom, and how it opened your eyes to the impacts of society and the judgment of society. So stay tuned for next week as we dive in a little bit deeper to what that looks like as a new mom.